Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, as an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Social Security private accounts when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it, and a Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax. A fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed at 72%. Well, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. We all know that. But what is it that government is doing for us to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, and 72% for a drink? Does the guy at the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit and eat it? Well, why does the government get paid more in tax than the actual people who produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call me here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for the free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status. The school is available on compact disc for adult home education. Call for more information. If you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the Ponzi scheme. I took you through the Ponzi story. Everybody loves the Ponzi scheme. The guy that wrote the book, you know, Paul Begala, wrote the book here, is Our Children Learning, said that Social Security is the most popular and successful social program in the history of the United States. Boy, he's not whistling Dixie there. In fact, they call it the third rail of politics. George Bush ought to be given at least an A for even taking it on. Bill Clinton didn't take it on. No president has wanted to take on Social Security from its inception. Not a one. That started with FDR in 1935. No president's ever wanted to take on Social Security and fix it. And Social Security needs fixing, if for no other reason that. From 1935 until today, 2005, Social Security has never been self-sustaining. Let me show you what happened here. The tax rate in 1935 was 1%. And the maximum wages that was taxed was $3,000. So the most that you could pay in was $30. 30 bucks. That's all you're going to ever pay in. All right, now the tax has gone up from 1% until today it's 15.3% for self-employed. So the tax rate has gone up 15,000%, 15 times. Not 1,500%, not 15,000, that's 15 times. Started at 1%, now it's at 15%. Now, in 1940, the first lady to draw a Social Security check was named. I mean, she's a pretty famous lady. And at that time, there were 80 people paying in for every person drawing out. By 1945, it was 45 to 1. And by 1957, it was 16 to 1. Today, it's 3.2 to 1. Now, mathematically, this thing is unsustainable. Can you see that? And everybody admits, and I brought this out in the last program, whether they're Republicans, Ted Kennedy says, yeah, it'll run out of money. It will not be able to meet its obligations by 2037. Dick Armey says 2018. Some others say 2023. I don't know. All I know is old Will Rogers used to say it's what I read in the papers, and I'm just reporting to you the numbers that are variously being reported. But everybody's in agreement that the thing is going broke. Whether it's going broke in 13 years, 23 years, 33 years, or 43 years, it's going broke. It is not mathematically self-sustainable. Let me show you what self-sustaining is. If you had $1 million in the bank, just for example, drawing 5% interest, that'd be $50,000 a year interest. If you could live on $50,000 a year, you could live forever on the $50,000 a year and you'd still have $1 million in the bank. All right, that's being self-sustaining. When you go to an insurance company and buy an annuity, which is the same as Social Security would be if it was self-sustaining, the insurance company takes your premiums and they invest it. They take your money and they buy the Empire State Building, and then they take the rents off of the Empire State Building and pay the beneficiaries. And as long as there's people to rent those offices in the Empire State Building, it's mathematically sustainable forever, or until the building falls down. Now, if Social Security were set up like that, we wouldn't have a problem. If Social Security had been set up as a self-sustaining retirement program, like an annuity with an insurance company, where the money that comes in is invested, and then the profits that come off of that investment were paid out to the beneficiaries, we wouldn't have a problem and the thing would work forever. But it's not. It was a Ponzi scheme. The money that's brought in is immediately paid out to the people who have invested ahead of you. And that's what a classic Ponzi is. And so it constantly requires more new members. And so when they started the program, they started off with the industrial workers, and they had about 15 million people. As time went on, they have continually expanded the number of people in the system. So you have more and more people paying in. But you've also got more and more people drawn out. And the amount of money that the people draw out is more than the amount of money that's being paid in. Now, everybody's in agreement that that's not self-sustainable, and at some point in time, the system is going to fail to meet its stated objective. Either one, there's got to be benefit cuts, or there's got to be tax increases. Now, from 1935 to 2005, the way that they have met this problem is by raising the tax. They have never cut the benefits. They keep expanding the benefits and raising the taxes. And they've done that 22 times. For instance, in 1935, the tax rate was 1%. By 1950, it was 2.25%. By 1960, the amount was 4.5% tax. By 1970, the tax had gone up 7.5%. By 1980, it was 8%. By 1990, it was 15%. And that's where it is today, 15%. Now, right now, because they raised it so dramatically from 8% to 15%, the thing now actually generates more money than is being paid out. But as the baby boomers, that's that 71 million people born after 1945, they get about 70 million of those people coming on stream now over the next 20 years, it's going to break the system. Well, that's what the Congressional Budget Office tells us, and that's what all of these people are telling us, that they won't be able to meet its obligations. Alan Greenspan said that. Bill Clinton said that. George Bush said that. The CBO says that. Now, the controversy seems to be over, is it a crisis today in 2005? Well, George Bush came up with some numbers the other day, and he said, well, it's costing us $1.5 trillion a year every year that we don't fix it. And the sooner we fix it, the sooner we can stop this $1.5 trillion hemorrhage. I gave you an analogy using lumber in my manufacturing plant. If I had a 10% loss in some manufacturing process that I needed to spend $10,000 to fix, we'd spend the money and fix it as soon as possible so we can stop that financial hemorrhage. And that's what Bush is telling us. There's this financial hemorrhage. If that's a crisis to you, then it's a crisis. If it isn't a crisis to you, then I guess it isn't a crisis. But I'm asking the question, well, what are you planning to do over the next 30 or 40 years to fix it? Well, the Democrats, this is Paul Begala, the guy that wrote the book, Is Our Children Learning, which, by the way, I'm recommending that you buy a copy. It's Simon & Schuster, $12, Is Our Children Learning. And that isn't an accident. It's not our children learning. It's Is Our Children Learning, and that's written by Paul Begala. And I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or what your political stripe is. I think it's a good book. He's a rabid radical liberal, and he's writing this book from the liberal perspective. And so I picked up on that, and I said, well, okay, let's take the bait and let's answer the question. Let's have a little dialogue here. Back in 1968, when I looked at this problem, I could see that if I had a private account, if I had the amount of money back here in 1968, 6.4% is what I was paying into Social Security. And I could see that if I took that amount of money, which was the maximum amount that I could pay into that system was $500 a year. If I paid in $500 a year and got paid just 5%, which I could get in any passbook bank account, I would have more money than Social Security was going to pay me, and I would still have the original principal. I could see that Social Security was a bad investment. Leaving aside the mark of the beast question and limited liability and insurance and the first commandment and the eighth commandment and tenth commandment, leaving aside the other arguments, that I've advanced over the years, it's just not a good investment. I would rather invest my money in an insurance company annuity. So President Bush comes along and says, if you would take this amount of money and invest it yourself, you'd be better off. Now, I notice that everybody's talking about the stock market. I don't want to invest my money in the stock market. I don't want to invest my money in bonds. So if President Bush is going to limit us to stocks and bonds, I couldn't agree with Mr. Begala more. The stock market has never produced a profit in excess of inflation in its history. Well, I shouldn't say history, because prior to 1933, when the inflation began, it produced a profit. After that, it hasn't. And after the collapse in 1929, it didn't break even until 1954. The inflation rate from 1960 to 2000 was 4.7%. You didn't get that kind of return on the stock market. So stocks are out for me. I don't want to invest my money in stocks. I might want to invest it in gold or silver. I can make 10% a year off of gold and silver. 10% a year, regularly, just trading gold and silver. And I covered that with you in times past. I could put my money into just an insurance company annuity, and I would be happy with that. So I don't know what President Bush has in mind for investments, but I would agree with the liberals that if this is just going to be a bonanza for Wall Street and our government is going to compel us to invest our money in stocks and bonds, that's a ripoff. I don't want it. I'd like to see President Bush give us freedom of choice. I'd like President Bush to say to me and everybody else, look, if you want to participate in Social Security, do it. If you don't want to support Social Security or participate in, opt out. Isn't that what America is all about? Isn't that what freedom of choice is all about? Yet today, if you don't participate in Social Security, they'll lock you up in prison. They call that tax evasion. Social Security is a tax. It's not an insurance premium. And Social Security is not insurance. It's a welfare benefit. It's just welfare. Nothing more, nothing less. I'll show you that as we progress along. So that being the case, I'd like to opt out of this Social Security welfare program. And I think that Paul Begala is 100% correct. Paul, all of the people that want to participate in Social Security should not be prohibited from doing that by Republicans like George Bush or George Gordon or anybody else. But why don't all of you Social Security advocates get together and participate in your Social Security program? I mean, if it's not a Ponzi scheme, I mean, come on, if it's not a Ponzi scheme, then it's got to be fiscally self-sustaining. And if George Bush has got a bad conclusion or a bad solution, Paul, why don't you and Ted Kennedy and all you good Democrats get together and come up with a solution? Solve the problem. And then you guys go out and participate in your program with your solved problem and leave George Gordon out of it. I don't want to participate in the program with you. I don't want you egalitarians, you people with all the smarts and the PhDs telling me how to live my life or how to take care of my money. I think I'm smart enough to do that for myself. But if I'm not, and I end up in the poorhouse on the county farm or starving to death, just leave me alone and let me starve to death quietly, would you? Just butt out and leave me alone. Now, that's what I say to you liberals. Now, of course, the liberals all know that they cannot have freedom of choice in Social Security because people like me would opt out by the droves and scores. And if people opt out of it, then the system, which is economically unsustainable, will collapse. It's just that simple. They know it. I know it. Because an insurance company like Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company, I used to have their insurance, and it's voluntary. Nobody comes to me and says, you have to invest in Northwestern Mutual Life, and if you don't, we're going to lock you up in prison. The police power of the state doesn't come into play like it does with Social Security. I'm free to choose, and so are you. If it's a good program, Northwestern Mutual will sell it to people because it's a good program. If it's not a good program, then people won't buy it. Now, Social Security is not a good program. I don't want to buy it. So in 1978, I opted out. Now, for those of you that are sitting here wondering, can I opt out of Social Security? The answer is yes, you can. You can opt out. Are there penalties? Yes, you're going to lose some money. But in the long run, I think that you'll more than make that up. So George Bush, in my view, has the correct solution, privatization. But don't try to save a Ponzi scheme. Scrap it. Just come to us and tell us, George, the system doesn't work. It's not economically self-sustaining. Let's privatize it. Let's let those that want to participate in it participate in it. And then when it collapses, let it collapse on them. That's what God did back in 1 Samuel chapter 8. He didn't sit here and argue with people and try to save them from their folly. He said, look, if you want a king, here's what's going to happen. We said we want a king. All right, now that's what's happened. We got what we deserve. As my old granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. Well, boys and girls, we made our bed, and now we have to sleep in it. So in 1968, I could see it was a bad plan. By 1978, I opted out. You can opt out because the thing is voluntary. Now, Mr. Begala pointed out that George Bush is a Republican and all Republicans hate Social Security. I don't know if that's really true. Listen to this. On the subject of Social Security, we'd better give this some serious thought. Since many of us have paid into FICA for years and are now receiving a Social Security check every month, and then find that we're getting taxed on 85% of the money that we paid into the federal government to put away, you may be interested in the following. So now you people on Social Security are having to pay income tax on 85% of the money that you paid in. So let me see if I understand this. I'm out here working, and Social Security is a 15% tax. And so you take 15% of what I make and you put that away for me because I'm stupid and I can't protect myself. I can't invest that money in a life insurance program, an annuity, or in some other investment. So government takes it from me. Then when I collect the benefits, they tax the benefits that come from it. And then Social Security pays back. Now get this, if you're in the high brackets today, when you retire, you'll get back $1 for every $5 that you put in. If you're in the middle income bracket, you'll get paid back $1 out of every $2.73 you pay in, you get a dollar back. And if you're a low income bracket, you'll get paid back 68 cents out of every dollar you put in. See, I don't think that's a very good plan, because if I put my money into an insurance company annuity, by law, they have to give me back 100 cents on the dollar. They don't have to give me any interest, but they got to give me back what I put in. So with Social Security, today, in the year 2005, when you put in $11,658 a year, that's the highest rate you can get, you'll get back $1 out of every $5 that you put in. And if you're putting in $5,600 a year, which is what you're paying on income of about $35,000, you'll get back $1 out of every $2.73 that you pay in. And if you're working for minimum wage, out of every $1,700 a year that you pay in, you get 68 cents out of every dollar. No insurance company can pay you back less than the full $1,700, $5,600, or $11,658. Only Social Security can give you back less than you pay in. And that's the ultimate end of a Ponzi scheme. When they started out, when you started, you could draw out $18,000, but you'd only pay in $600. And so that's what made Social Security so popular. When you pay in $600, you're going to get $18,000 back. No wonder Social Security became America's most popular social program. That's what Ponzi offered. He said, we'll give you 40% return in 45 days. Well, of course that was popular. But if you'll take a look at what happens, Ponzi has to have more and more people investing so that he can pay more and more money out to the investors at the top of the pyramid. At some point in time, you're unable to get enough people to join in. And America now has everybody in Social Security that they can get in. And the number of people now has continually declined. See, you had 80 to 1. Now you're down to 3.2 to 1 paying in. That's fatal to the program. Oven by itself. Secondly, the program started with a 1% tax rate, and now it's at a 15% tax rate. So it's gone up 15,000% at the same time that the number of people paying into it has declined by 25 times. So you've got 15 times more tax and 25 times fewer people. Ladies and gentlemen, you're on a collision course with, there's not going to be enough money in here to meet the obligations. And Dick Armey says 13 years is the magic number, 2018. Now maybe Dick Armey's lying to us. And maybe Mr. Bagala is telling us the truth that under the Bush plan it'll be 2023. Okay. Or maybe Kennedy's telling us the truth it'll be 2037. Okay. Or maybe somebody else is telling us the truth and it'll be 2050. But everybody's agreed that it's going to run out of money. And when it runs out of money, isn't that called bankruptcy? Isn't that called collapse? I mean, where I'm from, that's what they call it here. I'm in Missouri. We call that collapse. When you're unable to meet your obligations, we call that bankruptcy. Now, let's test this and see if it works. Let's picture you here in the year 2037, 2023, 2018, 2050, whichever year you want to pick. And Social Security is now sending you 75%. And this is what Ted Kennedy's suggesting, is that it's not going to be broke. It'll still be able to pay you 75%. Well, why don't you go down to the power company next month and just walk in and announce that I can only pay you 75% of my power bill and see what they say to you about future power delivery. And then go into the mortgage company and say I can only pay 75% of my house payment this month and see what they say about continued living in your house. And go down to your auto finance company and tell them I can only pay 75% of the auto payment this month and see if you're going to be left with your car or you're going to be afoot. I mean, you know, come on, boys and girls. You know, the real world is out there beckoning. And if you want to get a preview of the future, just test it next month and see if the power company says, well, it's no problem. We'll just deliver 75% of the power. Now, if the power company delivers 75% of the power for 75% of the payment, isn't that a benefit reduction? So whether you take the benefit reduction voluntarily today or you take the mandatory voluntary deduction later, it's coming, isn't it? I don't see any way to avoid it, and I don't see Paul Bagala or Ted Kennedy or Bill Clinton or George Bush or Dick Armey or anybody else saying there's going to be a demographic shift. It's true that there's 3.2 people paying into it today, but by the year 2023, there's going to be 6 people paying in for everybody drawn out, or there's going to be 12 people paying in for everybody drawing out by the year 2050, and that's going to solve the problem. I haven't heard anybody make that claim, have you? Now, the Democrats not only are the architects of Social Security, they claim that they are the protectors of the working people and the poor people. But listen to this. Which party took Social Security from an independent fund and put it into the general fund so that Congress could spend it? The answer to that is it was Lyndon Johnson, a Democrat, and the Democratic-controlled House and Senate. Question. Which political party put a tax on Social Security? Answer. It was the Democratic Party in control of the Congress. Question. Which party increased the tax on Social Security? Answer. The Democratic Party with Al Gore casting the deciding vote. Question. Which party decided to give money to immigrants? Answer. If you said the Democratic Party, that's right. You see, immigrants moving into this country at age 65 receive full Social Security benefits. It was the Democratic Party that gave that to them, although they never paid a dime into it. Then after doing all of this, the Democrats turn around and tell you that the Republicans want to take your Social Security. And the worst part about it is that the people believe it. Now, those are some facts that I just thought I'd share with you. I didn't write it. I didn't make it that way. I'm just reporting. Here's what happened, and here's who did it. So when Mr. Begala says, well, gee, it's George Bush. He's a Republican. He wants to take away your Social Security. I agree with Mr. Begala in this regard. George Bush is being disingenuous in telling us that he's going to solve this Ponzi scheme problem. Ladies and gentlemen, the Ponzi scheme is not correctable. The best thing you can do with a Ponzi scheme is to close it down. You know, the state of New York or the state of Massachusetts back in 1920, when the Ponzi scheme was running, they didn't, you know, move in and say, gee, let's come up with a mathematical plan to save the Ponzi scheme so that all these people can make their 40% profit every 90 days or 100% profit every 90 days. They closed it down to prevent other people from getting hurt, from losing their money. Now, it seemed like to me that if Mr. Begala and George Bush and all these politicians had an interest in saving you and I, they would close Social Security down. And no, they come back and they say, well, there's nothing wrong with Social Security. It's the most popular social program in the history of the country. And they tell you that, oh, it's economically viable. Well, excuse me, folks. If the thing has gone from 80 people paying in to one person drawing out to 3.2 to 1, and there's no change in the demographics. This demographic projection continues into the future. And it's going to go from 3.2 to 1 to 3 to 1 to 2 to 1 to 1 to 1. And then it'll reverse and it'll be for every person paying in, there's two people drawing out. And then for every person for paying in, there'll be four people drawing out and then eight people drawing out in 16. Come on, boys and girls, can you see that at some point in the future, even if you believe in Social Security and you want to work your heart out to make it work, you're going to run out of energy. There's not going to be enough energy in your body to go out and work and support 4, 8, or 16 other people beside yourself. Now, if you think that you can save it, if you think that you can do that, I want to encourage you. I want to get out of your way. I want you to go do that. I just don't want you to compel me to go along with you. I don't believe it. I don't want to participate in it, and I want to get the hell out of it. Leave me alone. If it's such a good program, why is it that you can't let me choose whether I want to participate or not? Huh? And that's because everybody that's running this Ponzi scheme, both Republicans and Democrats, know full well that that thing is dead. It's just a question of, well, when is it going to die? So back in 1978, I got out of it. Had I stayed into it, little Georgie Gordon would have paid in $153,000, and I would have received back approximately $100,000 on average from 65 to 75. Well, I'm 65 years old, and statistically, I'm going to die in 10 years. And I could collect $800 a month or a little over for the next 120 months, and I'm going to pay $50,000 to have some guy write me 120 checks. I don't need to pay somebody $50,000 to write me 120 checks. I can take care of myself, and I did. I opted out of Social Security, and I'm happy as a clam at high tide. Most Americans could opt out of Social Security in the morning and take care of themselves. And all of you young people out there are getting ripped off. But I wanted you to know that George Gordon is not stealing from you. George Gordon is not taking any Social Security benefits. I paid into the thing, but I'm not taking anything out. And I don't want to take your money away from you. And I think that George Bush's plan, if he would carry it through and let you have your money, and you invest that in any insurance company annuity, you can build up an annuity of several hundred thousand dollars. And that several hundred thousand dollars will pay you more money, three or four times more money than Social Security is projected to pay you when you retire 40 years from now. And you'll still have the whole amount of principal left, and you can leave it to your children. Social Security leaves you no principal. There's no principal there for you at all. And I think that's wrong. I think that's bad. But listen, people disagree with me, and they say, no, that's good. That's wonderful. And I say, well, terrific. Why don't you guys go out and do that and leave me out? Now, Gordon Phillips wrote a treatise here, and I'm going to share this treatise with you when we come back. Let me give you a reminder that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the law or an editorial review, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call Direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Social Security and these new private investment accounts. The book that I'm recommending for you, because this is the liberal point of view, and of course, if you want to review somebody's position, well, you have to take a look at their position. So in this program, I showed you what Paul Begala's position is. Last program, I read to you the Chapter 8, Social Insecurity, he titled it. And he presented their view. This is the Democratic liberal view on Social Security. I think he did a good job for his side. Now, I'm not a Republican. I'm not here to push these private accounts. I don't want the Republicans telling me how to invest my money, and I don't want the Democrats taking my money away from me. I'm opposed to both of them. I think both of them suck. So back in 78, I got out of the damn thing, and if you want to learn how to get out of it, why don't you send for my free general law CD package? That's the place to start, and let's start talking about it. Many people, 14 million people don't belong to Social Security here in the United States. Most 14 million people live their lives, you know. I live my life. I've got indoor plumbing and running water and electricity in my house and without a Social Security number. And I think I live just as well today as I ever have in the past. Well, a fellow by the name of Gordon M. Phillips wrote this little treatise here, so let me share it with you. Mr. Phillips says, the question, can I quit Social Security and get all of my money back? He answers the question by saying, the question, while appearing superficially reasonable, is grossly naive, belying, as it does, a fundamental misunderstanding of the situation. The answer is yes, sort of, and definitely no. You see, there is no legal provision within the Social Security Act to quit. However, the very term quit is a misnomer. Participation in Social Security is strictly voluntary. It's elective. It's consensual. Hence, in order to quit, de facto, one simply stops participating. An individual can elect to participate one quarter of a year, but not the next, and then participate again the following quarter, but not the next, and so forth. The Social Security Administration says that the Social Security Act does not require an individual citizen to have a Social Security number to live and work within the United States, nor does it require a Social Security number simply for the purpose of having one. Title 42 of the United States Code is titled Health, Education, and Welfare, and it contains the statutes pertaining to the Social Security Act. 42 U.S.C. Section 405(c)(2)(b)(1) Paragraph 1 states that a Social Security number is assigned to a non-resident alien upon lawful admission into the United States. Paragraph 2 states that a Social Security number is also assigned to any applicant for federal benefits. That's you. No tax is refundable. If a tax were refundable, it would be a donation, not a tax. Social Security is not a donation, tithing, or other contribution. It is a tax, and for this reason, you cannot get all of your Social Security money back. Those wishing no longer to participate would be wise to remember the adage that at any moment, life always consists of two phases, and that is number one, up until now, and number two, from now on. All tax monies paid into Social Security are gone forever, never to be seen again. In the future, one may decide to make arrangements to take care of his own retirement, as I and thousands of others are doing. Payments made this week to current Social Security benefits, the recipients, retirees, are made from the taxes collected from last week's participants. In other words, those exiting at the top of the pyramid are being funded in present time by those entering in at the bottom, the very essence of a classic Ponzi scheme. Earlier this year, the Social Security Administration had a link on their website stating why Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme. Apparently, waves of chuckling emails from visitors to that link caused government officials to remove the link, as it has since vanished, no doubt never to return again. When Social Security was first enacted in 1935, approximately 50 workers paid in to Social Security for each worker retiring. Today, the ratio is 3.2 to 1, and two are flipping hamburgers at minimum wage. The Social Security Act, which is part of Title 42 of the United States Code, was enacted as a U.S. government-sponsored voluntary pension program for the benefit of individuals who wish to participate in the program. The Act is administered by the Social Security Administration, which handles the administration and payment of benefits under the provisions of the law. Congress made its first attempt at socialist wealth redistribution when it passed legislation in 1934 to provide for the retirement of railroad workers. Since the workers traveled across state lines on the railroads, Congress argued that the act came under the Interstate Commerce Clause. Seeing through this transparent ruse, the Supreme Court shot the act down as unconstitutional in its decision in Railroad Retirement Board versus Alton Railroad Company, decided on May 6, 1935. Here's what they said. Supreme Court. Quote, the catalog of means and actions which might be imposed upon an employer in any business, tending to comfort and satisfaction of his employees, seems endless. Provisions for free medical attendance and nursing, for clothing, for food, for housing, for the education of children, and 100 other matters might with equal propriety be proposed as tending to relieve the employee of mental strain and worry. Can it fairly be said that the power of Congress to regulate interstate commerce extends to the prescription of any or all of these things? Is it not apparent that they are really and essentially related solely to the social welfare of the worker, and therefore remote from any regulation of commerce as such? We think the answer is plain. These matters obviously lie outside the orbit of congressional power. Now, the translation to that is the High Court informed Congress that it has no constitutional authority whatsoever to legislate for the social welfare of the worker. None. Zero. So Congress, in order to sidestep this constitutional speed bump on the road to eventual one-world government, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, a man whose name, in the opinion of many, including this writer, will one day live in infamy, of the most dangerous traitors that our country has ever known, and had the Social Security Act passed as a treaty. Contrary to popular misunderstanding, treaties do not apply to the citizen when residing within his own country, but when residing as an alien in the country with which the treaty is enacted. Otherwise, any foreign legislature, say that of France, could pass a law to dictate the legal requirements of a citizen sitting at his kitchen table in, say, Kansas. Well, obviously, such a contention is ludicrous on its face. Now, most people are unaware that our government mails thousands of Social Security checks each month to foreigners all over the world, each of whom worked as a resident in the United States long enough to become vested for retirement benefits. 40 quarters of voluntary participation are usually required before application for benefits can be made. However, benefits are never paid automatically. Application must first be made. That is, in order to be on the dole, as my granddad used to call it, you must first ask permission to receive your benefits. The Social Security Administration mails out approximately 47 million retirement, disability, unemployment, and Medicare checks each month, give or take a few million. They do this from their offices along Security Boulevard in Baltimore, Maryland. Acres and acres of Social Security Administration buildings, block after block, stretch back from the road as far as the eye can see, lights blazing in the windows on all of the floors all night long. It is truly the largest wealth redistribution factory in the history of the human race. Millions of people who would otherwise have conducted their affairs so as to be independent by the time they reach old age or living with their children as God intended, now instead depend for their very subsistence upon this monthly outpouring of congressional largesse, the result of which is an outpouring of votes for those politicians who promise to keep this largesse, this spigot, wide open. The tax upon which old age benefits are based is collected by the Internal Revenue Service under the provisions of Title 26 of the United States Code, otherwise known as the Internal Revenue Code. These monies collected by the IRS are not forwarded to Social Security or the Social Security Administration to fund its administrative and disbursement activities, as most people believe. Rather, these monies end up in the general fund along with all of the other tax revenues collected by the IRS. All taxes of whatever type ever collected to this date by the IRS, which is charged, by the way, with the duty of collecting all of this internal revenue, including Social Security taxes, have already long since been spent by Congress to, among other purposes too numerous to mention, prop up the buying power of the paper Federal Reserve note, which some erroneously refer to as a dollar. They fund studies of the sex life of the tsetse fly. They bail out the failed savings and loan companies. They build palatial offices for federal judges. They rescue the economies of a host of other countries, including Mexico, Russia, Malaysia, Brazil, not to mention dozens of others, none of which loans will ever be repaid. Now, since the days of the Eisenhower administration, Congress has spent far more money than it takes in. Hence, the currently $17 trillion deficit. Now, the public is led to believe that Social Security taxes are held in a Social Security trust fund. There is, in reality, no such fund existing on paper as an accounting gimmick only. Each year, Congress dips into this so-called trust fund to balance the government's books, leaving behind nothing more than a non-negotiable government bond, that's an IOU, promising to pay money to itself. Nowhere in the Constitution can you find the authority for the government to be in the insurance business. Wherefore, the very title Social Security Trust Fund, when viewed in its proper light, can be seen for what it really is. It's a blatant, disingenuous lie. Total propaganda. So as I write on page 101 of my book, Losing Your Illusions, on December the 13th, 1993, investment banker and chairman of the One World prompting Council on Foreign Relations Peter G. Peterson, he stated at an entitlements conference held at Bryn Mawr College, the federal government has borrowed over $7 trillion from the Social Security Trust Fund. Now, that was in 1993. Now, also on page 101 of Losing Your Illusion, I go on to state in excerpted part in an article in the October 9th, 1995 issue of Forbes magazine, which is titled The Legal Ponzi Scheme, Carl Borden, professor of financial economics at the University of Nebraska, wrote this. He said, Social Security is the classic playout of a Ponzi pyramid scheme. It's a sucker bet for most of the population. There are only a few things that you can do at this stage. One is to look for new suckers, that's new investors, or economist William Shipman, who co-chaired a study project on the privatization of Social Security, said, Social Security has been a horrifically bad investment for Americans. Dorcas Hardy, the Social Security Commissioner under President Reagan, who wrote a book called Social Insecurity denouncing this scam, was quoted in the December 1995 Reader's Digest as saying, there is no prospect that today's young workers will receive all of the Social Security and Medicare benefits currently promised them under current law. Ultimately, the money to repay all of these non-negotiable bonds can be raised only by a politically sensitive combination of A, reducing Social Security, Medicare, and all other welfare entitlement benefits through so-called means testing, or B, through a dramatic rise in the employment tax rate, or C, a combination of both. If you answered C, C is the correct answer. Most Americans will never see a dime of their Social Security tax contribution when it's their turn to collect. Write your representative in Congress and ask for a free copy of the Financial Outlook for Social Security and Medicare, published by the Congressional Research Service as report number 92-608. It was dated July 31st, 1992, and it uses the word insolvency 10 times in the report. Social Security is not a contract, as some have theorized, but it is a political promise to be kept at the whim of the legislature. Monies disbursed by the Social Security Administration must be appropriated by Congress each year as needed. It's a part of the federal budget process. Since no contractual obligation exists for the payment of any benefits, the benefits could be terminated at any time if Congress did not appropriate the funds. Stated more bluntly, Congress could renege on its promise simply by passing a majority vote to cancel all of the benefits. This vote could be held at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. You have no property rights in your Social Security account. Due to the aggressive lobbying efforts of the American Association of Retired Persons, known as AARP, whose members can be relied upon to defend the dole with their last ounce of breath, Congress has kept the benefits spigot wide open so far, while quietly instructing the print media to begin recognizing and reconditioning the public mindset to no longer depend upon Uncle Sam. A fact unknown to most Americans is that no individual account actually exists with the Social Security Administration. All of these supposed accounts are in reality mere bookkeeping entries of accrued benefits due to be paid out under a given Social Security number. Interestingly, the name associated with the individual to whom a Social Security number has been assigned is moot and of no importance. A legal name change would have no bearing on the benefits accrued as a result of contributions made under any given Social Security number. The number itself is everything, as was intended from the outset. The emerging socialist world order cannot come to full fruition without the citizens of the various nations under the Social Security Treaty Program being enumerated by their respective governments. Government surveillance and control of its populace would otherwise be impossible when so many units share the exact same name, such as Bob Smith or Juan Perez or Pierre Dupree. Who can tell them apart? But once numbered, however, all confusion ends and tracking becomes a matter of mere administrative procedure. Seen in its proper light, Social Security is a sovereignty transfer system under which rights to property are waived and they're converted into an expectation of benefits. For example, government largesse. This government largesse is to be doled out at the pleasure of the legislature. Now, a citizen has no standing in court to sue the government for his retirement check, since a beneficiary has no legal standing against his benefactor. So remember, as we always say, if you want to be free, you have to live free. Now, this is a treatise that was written by, and I'll give you his name and number here and see if you can get it. The alert number 1999-06-28 called Quitting Social Security. You can probably get a copy of it by writing to 12 Carroll Street, Suite 1787, Westminster, Maryland, 21157-4831. Now, they used to have a telephone there. Let's see if they still do. The number is 801-715-3890. Again, let me give you The Informed American. This was written by a fellow by the name of Gordon M. Phillips. Let's give him credit for writing the treatise. I agree with him wholeheartedly, and I think he's exactly correct. All of my research has told me the same story. I've reported that here on this program a number of times. It's called The Informed American, alert number 1999-06-28, Quitting Social Security. And their address is 12 Carroll Street, Suite 1787, Westminster, Maryland, 21157-4831. And let's see if their phone number is still good. It's 801-715-3890. Now, next time when we come back, we'll take a look at the history of Social Security. During the early 1930s, millions of Americans were out of work and out of business and into soup kitchens and bread lines. So Franklin D. Roosevelt had ordered them to surrender their gold. And, of course, that was House Joint Resolution 192. And a California doctor that I reported to you in times past by the name of Townsend proposed that the government give $200 a month to every American over age 65. And there was the origin of Social Security, and I've told you about the George Rapp Harmony Society in times past, and how this program is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. So we'll take that up next time as we review this book that I want to tell you about again. It's called Is Our Children Learning? It's published by Simon & Schuster. It's $12, written by Paul Begala. I think it's well worth the $12. You should know, if you're a Republican, what your enemy is saying about you. James Carville said every Democrat should memorize this book, every independent should read it, and every Republican should fear it. I don't see anything to fear about it. They state their position pretty clearly. And they admit freely, and everybody seems to admit, that Social Security is going to be insolvent at some time in the future. The history of it shows that it's clearly a Ponzi scheme. I've never seen a Ponzi scheme that could be resurrected or salvaged. And I kind of doubt that this one is going to be salvaged by George Bush. He says he's going to do it. I don't know. All right, we're just about out of time, so I got to leave it right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the law school telephone or web page. It's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's a signal. Says my time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.